Albert Einstein, the last 20 years of his life, this was his focus, what he called the unified field. He said the greatest illusion in the world is the illusion of separation. There was a quote that goes deeper into it and says that this optical delusion has created what he called a prison for us. And he says our job must be to free ourselves from this prison and embrace all of humanity and life around us. And then his third quote, which kind of is coming in here with what we're talking about, he said no problem can be solved at the level of consciousness that created it.
CT, I'm Cindy Barnes.
And I'm Travis Barnes.
And we are the founders of the Overcomers Podcast.
The Overcomers Podcast is designed to help you overcome adversity and live your dreams. Every week, we will be sharing stories of people who found their strength in their struggle. The Overcomers Podcast is sponsored by Journey 333, and that's a lot of threes, so let me tell you what it is. It's fitness, coaching, and nutrition. It is a place where we help you to look better, live better, and feel better, and it is mind, body, spirit. Today, we're going to help you get your mind right with our special guest.
Hello, Overcomer Nation. I am here with Steve Farrell today. He's an evolutionary pioneer, co-founder of the Humanities Team, and author of A New Universal Dream. This is his journey from Silicon Valley to life and service to humanity. He's sharing his expertise today about attaining real happiness. How about that? How would you like to attain real happiness? Are you happy? Well, Steve has some real answers for you, and I can't wait to have him share. So, Steve, welcome to the show.
Travis, hey, thanks so much for having me. Been looking forward to being here with you.
Well, I've been looking forward to having you because I want that authentic happiness, and I pursue it in my life, and I just can't wait to hear all the nuggets that you share with our audience today. It's going to be really good. So let's talk about, you know, kind of where this journey began for you. So then that way we can understand a little bit of your history that's, led you into this realm of helping others.
You bet. Well, so as you mentioned, you know, in this book where I kind of tell this true story, it actually took me years to write the book because I was chronicling my journey from age 12 out to today, an over 50-year journey. True story, and stopping along the way to kind of share all of the lessons learned. There were many, is the, is the short thing there. My journey, in one sense, I think, is very similar to almost probably everybody listening in a couple of ways. One, it starts there in the 1970s. So, I was living with my mom, who was divorced at the time. Six brothers and sisters, small home, about 1,250 square feet, which is pretty small for eight people and a pet or a couple.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Size of an apartment, and you had a lot of people there. Yes.
Yes. Right. Yeah. No, we were all sharing rooms, you know, divorced mom. She worked full time, by the way. Hard to believe, right? And then seven kids. So, and then my journey, again, I think is similar to maybe all generations ago and today's generation too. I think we all, when we leave our home, in a certain sense, are looking for adventure, for discovery, for treasure, if you will. And I think every generation has find something new and different there. And boy, you know, did I find something new and different? So, I did find the American dream thing that was what I thought my generation was about. And of course, I tell that story how I went out to Silicon Valley. I was living outside of Washington, D.C. there with my family. After college, I moved out to the San Francisco Bay Area, Silicon Valley, started a couple of companies, and I was absolutely in the right place at the right time. The internet was being born there in the early 90s. I'm starting companies that are supporting digital communications for large companies, and bam, you know, we hit it. And so that whole ride that took me into something very different than what I grew up in, the private jet world, all of that. And, you know, as you might imagine, the way I grew up, in fact, I paid for my braces when I was in the sixth grade. So, a very different life, you know, than the way I grew up.
Braces, that's not common.
But my own braces, yeah. We found an orthodontist that would take a monthly payment. I had a paper out, took $5 or $10 a month until I paid off my braces. So nice guy. Yeah.
That's awesome though. That's great that you did that. That's so cool.
So then, you know, is where the journey really got interesting because see, what I found is that that American dream is not what people think it is. And we've probably all heard these stories, you know, that money doesn't buy happiness. Materiality isn't the home run. We've heard this story before. Now I lived this story where I was actually there in the front row in the club. I was invited into the big business association there in Silicon Valley, where like the current governor of California and the guy that runs the largest real estate equity trust REIT in the whole world was in my club. There were 60 of us. They were all amazing people. Very successful. And you have something called Forum where you're very close, you know, and you share personal things that are confidential that are going on at home and with your in your work life and stuff. And what I could see there, Travis, is that the American dream thing is a mirage, I'll call it. Because as soon as you get to that destination, you know, your $50 million company, and I got to $75 million with two companies that I started there in the 90s. Well, then you're heading for $100 million after the celebration. Then you get to $100 million. Whoop, well, then we're heading for $200 million. So it's always out there on the horizon, you know, this thing. Now, the interesting thing is during this whole American dream thing, I went through my, I'll call it personal awakening experience. And you probably have lots of people that are what I'll call conscious here, where we've had that. We've had our own personal awakening experience. I had mine. And then everything changes. That's why they call it a personal awakening. You know, we kind of open our eyes almost like to a whole new world, you know, and see ourselves and the world around us differently. And my passions and interests, aspirations, everything changed. And so I did leave Silicon Valley. I sold my interests. I moved my family from Silicon Valley to Boulder, Colorado, where we've been located for the last 16 years. I launched a nonprofit 501c3 with Neil Donald Walsh, the author of Conversations with God, over 20 years ago. So I'll stop there. But
when you say that you had your personal awakening experience, I feel like we all want to know what that was, you know, like, what was the moment? Like, what was the timing, the event, the sequence of events? Like, how did it happen?
So I was actually running, I jogged in the morning there in early 1995. And the thing that was on my mind as I was running is kind of an interesting thing, at least for me, is I was thinking about obedience, which is kind of a funny thing to be thinking about, right? I was then reading some things from the Bible, and I thought I was just really troubled by this word. I thought, why? You know, and I'm spiritual. I've loved God my whole life, and therefore, you know, would bend my path to do what I thought would be in concert, you know, with God. And I thought, why would God want me to be obedient? Because obedient feels like you're putting a bit like in a horse's mouth, you know, and you just sort of lead it around. I thought, you know, I would go with you anywhere, you know, just if you put in my heart something, I'll go there. You know, I don't need a bit in my mouth, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, and then my mother and my sister called me out of the blue and said, I had to read this book. You got to read it now. It's going to change your whole life. I said, well, I don't want my whole life to change. No, I was in the middle of this like massive American dream thing. And they said, no, you need to read this book. It was Conversations with God, book one. This is, you know, Neil Donald Walsh's, that first Conversations with God book came out then. I read it and it did indeed change my whole life. There were lots of other books that I read. There's a whole bunch of science that I paid attention to, researched actually to sort of corroborate all of this. This is what Einstein called a unified field, you know, which is what in Conversations with God, it says, it talks about a oneness, you know, of with God and the universe, this omnipresence that is inclusive of everything. And in short, that book with this whole tone of just love, of open-heartedness, of connection was that same, I'll call it field or resonance or knowing that I'd had my whole life of just this really, again, loving, supportive God. Quite different. I grew up in the Catholic Church. I was even an altar boy there. You know, and back in that day, it was more, the church was kind of more of a judging, you know, you better be careful kind of thing. Guy even got in trouble with the priest, you know, if I didn't give him my tips. So it was a little, church was a little different, but I perceived that, you know, there's a God that has our back, that loves you, that supports you. And this was the tone, you know, and the content and the wisdom of the book. And so again, it just sort of set me on a path that that did change my whole life. And if the Humanities Team, this 501c3 nonprofit that I mentioned earlier that Neil and I started, it's all about supporting people on this whole conscious journey, the personal awakening experience, our whole journey to, you know, higher purpose and to overcome it, to a great life.
So if somebody was to read your precedent, you know, if you were to read that for Conversations with God, do you think that it, I mean, what is the thing that you got out of it the most? Was it the a different relationship with God, a different form of communication with God? What do you feel that, yeah.
You know, probably all of those things. So that the big thing, and if there were actually 9 of these books, the last one that came out, the last Conversations with God book was called Awaken the Species. It came out in 2017. There are 9 of these books in total. They're what I call the big global conversation, you know, where Neil asks the questions and then these responses, these answers come back that are just mind blowing, you know, which is why the book was 137 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Neil was homeless, you know, if you know his story. And then people were reading this book going, you know, where did this wisdom come from? So in short, what it does is it answers, I think, life's biggest questions, you know, of who am I? Why am I here? What's my invitation in life? How can I overcome, you know, and live just a what I'll call a delicious life? How can I do that? All of those questions are answered there. Life's biggest mysteries, biggest questions, you know, these are questions I think a lot of people ponder. It answers those questions. And what's interesting is, Travis, is that science is now affirming all of this. You may know quantum physics, you know, even the Nobel Prize for physics last year, 3 researchers, entanglement. It gets into all of this sort of oneness thing, or what the scientists call a unified field, which says that the whole cosmos, you know, the entire universe is actually deeply connected, interrelated, and interdependent, that we put out a kinetic energy, and that there's actually, this is mind-blowing, that there's no such thing as a separated self. I mean, I grew up with, you know, hey, of course there's a separated self. I'm here, you're there,
right?
Here's my body right here. What do you mean there's no separated self? Well, you know, the physicists and, again, mystics, spiritual leaders, Conversations with God says, no, there's no such thing as a separated self, that this energy, it's like when you throw a little pebble in a pond or something or in a lake, there's these ripples that go out. Well, there's this kinetic energy actually from us all day long, you know, even in our dreaming states where we're actually putting energy out into the quantum field, out into the collective.
Amazing.
So we can decide what kind of energy that's going to be. If we're, I'll call it unconscious, we don't pay attention and we're just putting this energy out, good, bad, and indifferent. Once we learn to be conscious, then we're very thoughtful about that kind of energy that we put out.
Wow. I love that. And in your book, it's going to help you, reading through that book is going to help a person to reconnect to the divine within. What do you mean by that? Like, I mean, what is that? What is that experience like? What would you expect as an outcome for a person that's read your book that's now reconnected? Well, but what a, you know, give us a little vision of that, if you would.
Yeah, you bet. So we would all probably identify with, you know, we have a physical life, a mental life, an emotional life, and a spiritual life. Most of us would say, yeah, I have those different parts of my life. So the spiritual life, so we'd say, well, what is that? And how do you get in touch with that? Now, that's that still small voice that we read about and have heard of. There's a still small voice that we can pay attention to. Sometimes we call that our conscience, but we can actually feel it. I certainly did throughout my life. And when we don't pay attention to it, it's like, I'll call it a cognitive dissonance where, hey, you know, are you not doing what you could do? Now you're not living into the fullness of who you could be. So that still small voices, I'm going to call it our soul's calling, that we're all familiar with this notion of a soul. Now, the biggest decisions that we make in our life, like who we're going to marry or partner off and in the city we're going to live in, well, most of us pay attention for those, really, because we want to ask around and really feel into it and pray about it. And usually we'll make a decision that does, in fact, support us real well, because we pay attention to the still small voice. When we really enter into this conscious lifestyle, we understand that this is actually the thing that we want to always pay attention to, not just the big, massive decisions, but the little decisions, actually all day long, just paying attention to the still small voice of what is my station in life? What is the thing that I can contribute to? Because I'm part of this larger whole here. Most people would say this is kind of a challenging time. You know, a lot of sense of separation, anxiety, even disempowerment, these kinds of things. Then what's going on out in the world, of course, I don't need to review those things. Lots of challenge. So to pay attention to that still small voice, go to what I'm going to call your station in life, where you're really doing the things that you can and should do while you're here, that's what actually creates this whole delicious life. That's why I call it, if we were looking for a metaphor, it's like floating on a raft. I can assure you, I haven't lived my life this way my whole life, but now it's like floating on a raft above the roller coaster where you get up and go, man, this is a rotten day, you know, or this is a pretty good day. Something good happened, right? The roller coaster thing. Now it's like I'm on a raft. And I still have all the challenges. It's not that the challenges go away. It's just that I'm in this very different place in terms of my being state, in terms of how I'm feeling, in terms of the emotional energy that I have going on with me and that I bring to things that I do.
You know, I read a quote by Eckhart Tolle one time that said, I am no longer the thinker of the thoughts, but the one observing the thoughts. Would you say that that is similar to what you're describing, like to just be able to more so observe what's going on? Is that the floating on the raft? Is that what you mean by that?
Well, I'll give you some examples that are even more clear on this. So, you know, 2,000 years ago, it was said, my yoke is easy, my burden is light, right? Many people are familiar with that quote. Another one 2,500 years ago that says, when I have pure thought, joy follows me like a shadow. Okay, these two quotes are going straight at what I mean by life is like floating on a raft. Where we get connected, see what this whole oneness or unified field theory thing means is that we are actually all an expression of the Most High. That's not something we haven't heard. You know, you're made in the likeness and image of God, right? We've all heard that one. We paid attention to it for 2 or 3 minutes on a Sunday. It's like, I'll heard it something else. But so what this science and these mystical teachings are sharing is no, don't, that's not a 2 or 3 minute. That's like actually real, you know, that you could call it royal blood flowing through you, that you are an emanation of the Most High, sent here at this time when the earth is very, very challenged, right? People are challenged. The world around us is challenged. What we do when we get state, we're paying attention to that still small voice, we're going to our station in life, is that we're in service. We open our heart, we're in service, we're supporting the world around us, our home, our community, and the workplace, the world around us. That this actually was the whole invitation in life is what we learn, you know, from these teachings. And where we put ourselves in service like this, then we create that raft-like experience. Then we create this whole delicious way of living. Thus, if you listen, you know, that quote, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. And also, you know, my pure thoughts create a joy that's like a shadow that follows me. So those are really going straight at what I'm talking about, where we're in this connected state that is really, I call it a delicious, you know, way of living. It's a beautiful state. I think it's the state that we were all invited to in coming into this life, but we're having to go through our own personal awakening to kind of see what this is, understand it, live into it.
Yeah, as you continue to describe the connected state, and, you know, going back to where you say that there really is nothing separate, you know, that we're all one. By the connected state and by what you were just describing about, you know, being in service to others, I mean, are the two connected? For lack of a better word, are they connected? Like, as in, of course, I'm in service to others because we're one. I mean, is that the philosophy? Or because some people, when they hear service, they're like, well, where do I serve? How do I serve? I guess through connectedness, you see an opportunity almost everywhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what this all that's down to, you know, again, I can use, we've got many scientists that create masterclasses with us, and then I can, all the spiritual leaders too, also philosophers, you know, and embodied practices, all of it. But so the spiritual words, which I think are the most powerful and the most accurate, are that life is the divine or divinity incarnate. So boy, you got to kind of sit with that one. And then even after you sit with it, it's like, well, wow, okay. Not sure what to do with that, right? But what it means is that these properties of this omnipresence, you know, of the divine are our properties. That, and many of us now are familiar with mediums. Again, I work with actually mediums that create master classes. We're also familiar with the near-death experience people. Dr. Evan Alexander, who taught at Harvard Medical School, who wrote a book called Proof of Heaven, right? So, and there are lots of these NDE experiences out there. Most of us have heard of these. So what we understand when we study those teachings from the afterlife and then this physical life is we do actually have many, many lives, just as these mediums and NDEers are sharing, you know, that we come into a body, we physicalize because our soul wants to accomplish something. I think what it wants to accomplish in many cases in today's world is just to be of service, to create homes that are more loving, more kind, more in service, and then to bring that kind of thing out in the world and to feel the deliciousness of that. See, I think a lot of people, without me kind of talking about this here now, would think, well, you know, being in service and soul's calling sounds like I might have to go live in a cave somewhere or something and give up a lot of stuff. And I'm not sure I'm ready to give a lot of stuff up. Now here's the thing. It's actually just the opposite of that, okay, is what I found. Now, again, and I lived in the private jet world, so it's like a boomerang effect. So remember this thing that's shared, that give unto the kingdom, and then all things are given unto you. So this is what I found to be true, where I live the way that I'm talking about, and where I live this way with my family and humanities team, this nonprofit stuff. There's no better way to live. It's like you know, I started out by saying each generation is in search of adventure, discovery, and treasure, right? This, I believe, is the treasure for our generation. I believe that there's a migration right now to what I'm to conscious living, this thing I'm describing. It's not being reported in the press, but I believe that there's a huge migration going on right now, and that many people that are listening in right now probably have had at least glimpses of this, a taste of it, and are most people are looking to live into their deeper values and things. This is about living into our deeper values and our real mission and purpose.
You know, I really love what you're saying. It's something that, you know, you just recognize truth when you see it. And for me personally, I grew up, I went to Catholic school, you know, those types of regimented things. And I've always found it interesting that we were taught that we were eternal. However, our eternity seemed to only start right when we were born. So we're the eternal from when we were born, but we don't get to be eternal before we were born. I like the way that you've been connecting science throughout our episode today, because, you know, it wasn't long ago, maybe a couple birthdays ago, I'm like, geez, I'm getting a little older. And I was just reading up on energy, had a good audible going with Wayne Dyer. think there was a little something in there about the law of thermodynamics and, you know, energy not being created nor destroyed, and the same amount of energy that's, you know, here has always been here. So I started thinking, geez, you know, maybe I'm not really having a midlife crisis. Maybe I'm really 4.5 billion years old and I don't have to worry about it, you know, like, and so I'm like, you know, kind of trying to wrap my mind around this whole eternity thing, you know. But how did you, Steve, how did you reconcile where you're at today with your early teachings? Because we have people that have no faith and have very regimented faiths and, you know, subscribe to a particular religion listening today. And so, you know, you're coming from that Catholic background and here you are today. I mean, how did you get to this evolution?
Well, this is why I was drawn to your program, Travis, because, you know, it's called Overcomers, and this is overcoming. So overcoming in the sense that they're, I'll call it, we're sheeple, you know, just kind of following the crowd.
Yeah.
Then, you know, socially, everything's good. It doesn't lead us ever, is my experience, to that real delicious way of living, though, that real home run that we want in life. On the other hand, where we follow truth, our truth, okay, that's still small voice, where we follow our truth, even when our family, you know, and you says, hey, you know, don't do that. Your coworkers say, don't do that. You're making a mistake. But no, we've spent the time in our daily practice. We've really paid attention and we know, no, this is my truth. This is what life is. This is how life works. And where we follow that truth, and we don't put any boundaries around it or guardrails that say, you know, or in other words, where you get to a certain point and say, okay, this is going against the church that I grew up in. It's over. I'm going to stop following my truth now. You know, we can't do that. If we do that, then we will not go to our mission and purpose and destiny in this life. So this, it is an overcoming thing in the sense that you're, even where you're going against social perspectives, mores, what is socially acceptable, you just keep going because you can see that this is true. Now, what's interesting here, Travis, is when we started Humanities Team 21 years ago in June, people were like, you know, what are you doing? Why are you throwing your life away? Cross-eyed. Now, science is affirming all of this. Most people have heard, you know, of quantum physics, this notion that everything is deeply interconnected, that we're made of stardust, these kinds of things. There's an omnipresence that we're a part of. As I mentioned, even the Nobel Prize for Physics was entanglement in October of last year. Well, you look up in the dictionary, entanglement. What is entanglement? Entanglement, it says, well, you can have two things that could be hundreds of light years apart in the universe, and there's no physical connection, and they're deeply affecting each other. So what is that? You know, we didn't grow up with the science of that, right? We grew up with the Newtonian Darwinian science of, you know, Steve Farrell, well, that's me, this is body, and I'll be 5 feet under in 20 years, and, you know, that's who I am. I'm not, and there's no connection to anything anywhere. You know, my eyes deceive me. What's interesting is, this actually is not new stuff that didn't just come like from conversations with God. Albert Einstein, you know, the last 20 years of his life, this was his focus, what he called the unified field. At 1921, okay, so this is 103 years ago, he said the greatest illusion in the world is the illusion of separation. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting, you know? There was a quote that goes deeper into it and says that this optical delusion has created what he called a prison for us. And he says, our job must be to free ourselves from this prison and embrace all of humanity and life around us. And then his third quote, which kind of is coming in here with what we're talking about, he said, no problem can be solved at the level of consciousness that created it. Okay, so that means like now where we have, you know, CO2 emissions and things and overuse of land, water, and resources, and which is what's created this whole, some refer to it as a potential sixth grade mass extinction, you know, that if we don't steward our planet better, that So how do we get out of this crisis that we're in, where we have this overuse of all of these resources? So the way we believe to get out of it is exactly what Einstein said, is that no problem can be solved at this level of consciousness where we believe that we're separate. But where we do the homework, the research, and embrace this whole this world around us and understand that that's our bigger self in a sense, you know, move the fence posts out from just my body to the whole of the universe and cosmos, and then start living into that bigger self, which is what I've been talking about here. This is the thing. This becomes the remedy to all of these problems individually and collectively that are here. Briefly, that's a big statement. So I'll just briefly say, I don't feel separation ever. I don't feel fatigue. I don't feel anxiety, depression. I don't feel disempowerment. I'm a part of this, you know, this beautiful life that I have, which is the world and the universe and the cosmos. As well, once I start living that way, I could never do the kinds of things that we do that contribute to misuse of land, water, or resources. It's my bigger self, if you will. So I bought an electric car as soon as I could afford to buy an electric car. All of the ways that we recycle and things, as a conscious consumer, I buy clothes where I see that they're actually made of fabrics that are using recycled materials and things. What we naturally do once we come into this place of connection are these things that I'm describing. And we only need 8 to 10% of us to live this way on the planet. And boom, you know, with this existential crisis thing is over. We create this compassionate, sustainable, and flourishing Earth. And that is actually the mission of this nonprofit humanities team that I belong to, that by 2040, which is in 16 years, so that's not that far out, that we create a fulfilling, compassionate, and sustainable world by supporting conscious living planet-wide.
That's really good. You know, going back to your perspective on, you know, the many lives and, you know, that, you know, this eternity thought, Einstein also said that time is an illusion, and that you just stated that many of us grew up paying attention to Newtonian time, and many of us today still only pay attention to that time. However, Einstein had another theory, and it was the theory of relativity. And, you know, that theory of relativity really isn't too focused on Newtonian because, of course, time can move faster for some than others and slower for some than others. So what type of time would you say that you're focused on being somebody that lives consciously? You know, I mean, is it different for you? Is it different for those that live consciously?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think what it is it, you know, which we hear so much about Eckhart Tolle and so on, is the present, you know. It's just like the present, like right now, I'm here with you. I'm here with viewers and listeners, and I'm 100% here. So there's nothing going on that happened in the past. There's nothing important to me in the future that I need to think about or be cognizant of at all. I can be totally present here right now and really talk thoughtfully, you know, to the questions that you're asking, because they're important questions. Living in the present is where, you know, as we've heard, you know, the present is the present, right?
Right. Yeah, it is. It's a gift.
Yeah. I mean, and it's true. It really is true. And where you can just, part of this whole process is kind of opening your heart and living in service. By the way, you know, our daily, people might find this all kind of ambiguous and abstract. It's actually not. There are processes that make this all pretty easy, really. So we actually turn those if you want.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because what you're describing takes a discipline that must come from practices. So I was actually just about to ask you that. So how would someone that maybe has a lot of, spends a lot of their time worrying about the past and focusing on the future and never able to be present, how does somebody put practices in place that could allow them to experience what you're experiencing?
So let's first go through just three steps that people can take. So the first one is education. So, you know, where there's some awareness, of course, that's underneath all of this. So, and then listening to this program is awareness building about, you know, there's some things that were shared that are a little different that I want to look into. So that's where our awareness is kind of stirring the pot. So The next step then is education. So this nonprofit that I'm a part of, it's called Humanities Team with a Y, Humanity, Y-S, and T-E-A-M.org. If you go to our website and at the top left, or it says programs, you can pull that down and there are lots of free programs. Just you'll see free programs. Free programs from scientists, from mediums, from near-death experience, from spiritual leaders, et cetera. Pull down those free programs. Go through a few of those free programs, you know, maybe in science that gets into the whole science, the physics of this that I'm talking about. That tends to be real helpful for a lot of people. So the first step is just educating ourselves. So, because there's no value in taking it from me, you know, we've got to do our own research to really look into these deeply held beliefs and go, God, you know, maybe there is no such thing as a separated self, which is a first step. So after we educate ourselves, then the next natural thing is the embodiment or expression step of, okay, I get it. You know, I understand this now, and I'm gonna put this teaching to use, right? So that's the whole reason for education in the first place is we learn new things and we want to live into those new things. So we start embodying or expressing, you know, these teachings. So this is what I've been getting into where I shared leaving Silicon Valley and this whole new way of living that I call delicious or like being on a raft. That's from this whole embodiment of these teachings, you know, expressing these teachings, living into my life in a different way, even sleeping in a whole different way, where I really appreciate like my time at night and the blankets over me and stuff. Whereas just to draw a contrast here, in Silicon Valley days, man, I didn't appreciate sleeping. It was like 10 o'clock. I know what I was doing at 6 in the morning, 7, 8. I just want that night to pass. Let's get this night over. I got things I need to do in the morning. Not anymore. You know, now all 24 hours has its place. Just being here, it's fantastic. At night, you know, sleep time, dream time having its place and just enjoying that moment. So, and 24 hours a day, you know, enjoying that experience. It all has its moment. Okay, then the third step after embodiment expression is engage. So just like anything, where we find something that's working for us and that's true, that's creating this, what I'm calling delicious style of living, man, we better go out and share it because there's a lot of people, right, especially in today's world, that are going, I wouldn't describe my life that way. Right? This whole fatigue, exhaustion, a lot of times isolation. What I've experienced, I would love other people to experience. That's why I'm here with you, Travis, to talk about it, share what is it? How does it work? Because I would love for nothing more than all 8 billion people on the planet, you know, to be living this way. And if we were, we'd also get to this tipping point where our kids could have a fantastic future on the planet. Again, once we live into this, we steward the earth well. We help each other. You know, we can't do everything on the planet, but we can all do something. And when we all do something, bam, we create this whole new way of living on the earth, you know, that creates a sustainable earth and stuff. So those are the three steps: education, then embodiment and expression, and then the third step, engagement. There are other things beyond that, but that can get us started.
That's just so awesome. So beautiful to think about. I'm curious because I feel like there are people that will preach in the modern churches that you can experience a heaven on earth. And in the older churches we were raised, that we're either going to heaven or hell. And I guess if you're Catholic, you might have a waiting room along the way, you know? So there's some things like that. Do you feel that this is like an element of like heaven on earth to really just be experiencing that oneness now rather than waiting to kind of meet your higher self, right? When we're no longer just so focused on this bag of skin that we walk around in, right? But I mean, is it like a heaven on earth? I mean, what are your perspectives on that when it comes to things like, you know, afterlife? You know, you grew up in the heaven and hell, you know, brimstone and fire, and now, you know, here you are today experiencing what you're experiencing.
Yeah, right. So it is like that. So, and let me say in the afterlife too, again, I work with the mediums, all of the top mediums. We create masterclasses with James Von Prague, Suzanne Giesman, Karen Noe, you know, and others. The near-death experience community, I work with these people. So I can say things that might sound a little unusual to people that haven't spent the time with these people that I have, like, don't worry about the afterlife, because it's beautiful. There are no issues in the afterlife. You will people are going to be astounded, is what I, and they're, because they're, it's a fairly unanimous perspective on what that is, that container, I'll call it, of oneness that is pure love. So then the question becomes, so, but your question is about here and now. It is a heaven on earth thing. And where we call it align with the divine, that's this whole oneness thing, this omnipresence, you know, where we align with it, create a connection with it, a daily practice, which is a part of this too. I went through the kind of the three E's, but a daily practice is huge, where throughout your day, you know, you're just staying in this connected state that I'm talking about, where you're seeing your connection with nature, with the world around you, especially nature that is just in this whole connection state all day long. I'm looking out the window right now. You can also listen to different kinds of music with high frequencies that are said to be universal frequencies. So there's sound healing, you know, and other kinds of things, modalities, embodied practices, yoga, qigong, and so on, that can put you in this state. Where we live in this state, then yeah, I would call it a heaven on earth kind of thing. Now, that's when I call it a delicious living thing. Yeah, that's what it is. I know why I'm here. I know what my opportunity is, which is to contribute to the world around me. Let me just bring in one other example, just because I don't want this to sound all too ambiguous. I also don't want it all to just surround me. So in my book, I talk about a guy, Ken Berenger is his name, and he's a billionaire. He actually passed 3 or 4 years ago, but he was a billionaire that had them all. He had the Seattle Seahawks, even a football team. He had 150 antique cars, his mansion. He had a 737 size jet, you know, which I flew on, all the toys. And interestingly, he said, until age 70, I could not find it. I mean, she had this football team and his jet and all this stuff. And he says, I could not find it. And then I found it. Well, said Ken, how'd you find it? I started giving myself away, started the Wheelchair Foundation. You could Google that now, you know, it's Wheelchair Foundation. He started loading his jet up with wheelchairs and flying all over the world and giving away wheelchairs, because a wheelchair not only gives mobility to a person in the third world, you know, outside of the U.S., families are rather poor in most cases. And so family members would be carrying this person around. You know, the whole family would lack mobility because they take turns carrying the person around. So you give a single little wheelchair to this one person and the whole family's freed up and the person has mobility, and he would see these smiles of, and it just put him on fire. He said, I finally found it, you know? So here's an example too.
And do you feel that that's possibly an analogy, that if we could give this gift of what you're experiencing to one person, that it might also set their entire family free from some of the bonds that we create? I mean, it's an interesting concept there, you know. In today's episode, I want to ask you to give us some action steps, you know. One could be, of course, reading your book. You've even given us some, you know, history to your reading as well, and the humanities team, that we can engage in some free downloads as well. Where should we begin? You know, people are hearing things today and they're like, you know, I'd like to experience what he's talking about. How do I get started?
So let me give you just a little more science, and then let me go straight to your question, Travis. So there are scientists today, Nassim Harriman, Greg Braden, Lynn McTaggart, Bruce Lipton. Bruce Lipton was a researcher at Stanford, you know, and a very esteemed one at that, and others that are, this is their life work. I'm just naming a few. There are whole bunches of scientists. It's not just quantum physics and physics. It's biology, which is what Bruce Lipton is, a biologist. Greg Braden is a geologist. So, you know, the whole range of scientists, there are many that have made this their life work and have delved into it and are saying, no, you know, these mystical teachings, the things I'm reviewing from the spiritual side, this is what their work is the science of affirming all of this, that these mystical teachings, also teachings from conversations with God, these are true. And if you spend time with this, and you might imagine I've spent a lot of time with it going back to the mid-90s, but so go back to like 450 BCE, okay, Hippocrates and Plato, most of us have heard their names. Look at what they wrote. I mean, it's staggering. They were saying, no, there's only one consciousness. You know, there's one consciousness of which we are all a part. So these teachings go way back to esteemed people who have lived through the history of time. Albert Einstein, again, spent over a decade on this near the end of his life with his what he called unified field theory. He couldn't quite bring closure to it, but now with Nobel Prize for Physics and all of this other research, it is affirming all of these things that I'm talking about. So now, other steps we can take? So let me share another freebie thing here, or can be a freebie anyway, is you and I, Travis, are just kind of flying, you know, at 50,000 feet because we don't have that much time covering things. So Neil Donald Walsh, again, author of Conversations with God, and myself, what we did is we were looking at all of these teachings, you know, back through the history of time and including those that came from the Conversations with God books. And we said, which support this, what I'm calling conscious living. It goes by many names, but increasingly people are talking about this as conscious living. So we said, wouldn't it be incredible if we could create a masterclass that pulled all of this together, you know, into 16 modules? So, I mean, really where we're going, anywhere from 15 to 35 minutes each module and mentoring and all of these things, so we can go deep, in other words, on all of this. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could create a masterclass with all of it and then do something we've never done before in our almost 21 years in humanities team, and that is allow people to name their own price. So if the information is this important, then we shouldn't have a gate, you know, of price, where somebody says, oh my God, I want to learn these teachings, but I just don't have any money at all. I'm broke right now. Okay. When you go to this masterclass, is called The Art and Science of Living Consciously. It's on the humanitiesteam.org site. So that's humanitiesteam.org. Okay. And then you go up top to the programs, pull down the masterclasses. Okay, go to The Art and Science of Living Consciously. You'll see Neil's and my masterclass there. You can read about the whole thing. And then at the bottom, it will let you name your own price up to and including zero to go through this if you don't have any budget. And again, the reason that we created this, because we put 6 months into researching it, and then we put another 6 months into recording it, and we have a staff to pay, is what I'm talking about, I believe, is so important that we didn't want to have it be limited by price. So I would strongly encourage people to go through that, even if you have no budget at all.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Thank you for doing that for people that can't afford it, just to be able to have access to that information. It's a testimony to, you know, of course, just wanting to share what truth is. That, you know, when people put heavy price tags on things, you know, then Is it just another marketing concept, or is it truth, right? You know, but that's awesome. That's so great. And so to continue on the journey, that's a great path. And then how do people engage with you or follow or, you know, get more of you? Like, as like you say, there's so much that we could cover today. Like when you're talking about universal knowledge, I want to go there, like one consciousness, you know. There's just so much to be learned about how we can tap into things like that. So how do people continue to learn from you?
Yeah, so here's a couple things. One is you can go to anewuniversaldream.com. That's the name of the book, anewuniversaldream.com. And the first chapters of the book are opened up for free. And then the book right now, the price varies. It's got a Kindle, Audible, paperback. paperback's about $14 right now. If you enter your receipt from wherever you buy the book on the website, we're giving away the first masterclass I ever created on conscious leadership, which is, we used to charge $300 for that. So it's a, that's a pretty good deal. That's a newuniversaldream.com. For me, I'm going to even give you my email address, though it may be my assistant that's reaching out, but where people feel called to reach out, they can. So it's Steve, S-T-E-V-E dot Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L at humanitiesteam.org. And yeah, and I work with incredible people all over the world. We have 65 country coordinators where we're out in countries all over the world, including like China, and then in the Middle East and Israel. And and we're out just not so much in a career as a calling where, you know, we're just trying to support people, you know, on this conscious journey where our whole, as we're pointing fingers at where to go, we're pointing to people's within, to that still small voice, to that soul's calling. We're saying, don't take it from me. Yeah, this is not a Steve Farrell thing. This is for each of us individually. There is this whole, the point of these teachings is there is no separation. So where we take the time to quiet ourselves and go within into the stillness and really pay attention and even ask, say, hey, God, you know, like, where are you? I don't really feel your presence. You know, help me to feel your presence. You will feel his, her presence. You will. You can even ask, you know, I want help with this. I'm trying to figure this out. And give it a little bit of time, you know, and really keep your antennas up, you will be guided. So that's our whole thing is, you know, we don't need to listen to outside third parties, you know, even well-meaning ones. It's right there within. That's what this oneness thing means is we can, in our own daily practice, in our own prayer, in our own meditation, in our own walking in the woods, we can just go within, ask those questions, and we will be guided and we will be supported.
Wow. That's amazing. And thank you for being willing to share your email address as well so that people could reach out directly. That's awesome. This is a journey that I look forward to taking, and I'm encouraging all the Overcomer Nation to engage more and find that true happiness. You know, what is real happiness? That you've given us a taste of it, and I am hungry for more of this delicious life. So thank you, Steve, for sharing with our audience today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Travis.
Thanks for listening, Overcomer Nation. Make sure if you haven't already, give us a 5-star rating. Make sure that you share this and subscribe so you can see all of our future content.
That's right. And if you'd like to be a guest on a future show, go to overcomers-podcast.com. If you're interested in our franchise opportunities with Journey 333, then go to www.journeyfitness333.com. And finally, if you like what you heard today and you feel like you're somebody that needs a bit more coaching, go to travisbarnes.com. Yeah!